Okie dokie, am I on? My mic is green. I think that means yes. So I don't know if any of you, since I guess it's the same group, who return, it looks like I recognize some of the names, but not all. If anybody has any questions at all about anything that we've just dipped into, since that's all we can do in this period of time, you're more than welcome to ask or to make comments or interrupt or anything else throughout. If I could see your faces, I would know what your questions are. But since I can't see you, I have to count on you asking questions if that's something you want to pursue. And you let me know. And if not, we'll jump in. I see the title of what has just gone before me as Causeless Joy, which is such a great title. And it's so accurate because we are so habituated to thinking that joy or peace or anything else that we want to experience is something that we head toward or something that we do something about. I mean, after all, we're trained, overly programmed that whatever experiences we have, we somehow have to make happen, that we either make experiences happen or we prevent them from happening. And of course, nothing could be further from the truth. So, seeing this title reminds me of a couple of experiences I had in Turkey. I had no plans to tell you this, but that's what happens when you just see a title and it jumps out at you. About 12 years ago, I was with a fairly small group. It was just a marvelous trip. This was before Turkey got to be quite so wild as it is now, so it was a safe place to travel to. I'm not sure it is now. But nevertheless, we were in the company of two world-famous historical Jesus scholars. In other words, the experts who have explored who was this historical Jesus person? They're by no means course students. They're more at it from the time and space, who was this person? But nevertheless, this trip we were on was called In the Footsteps of Paul, because Paul, as you probably remember from Sunday school days, if you went there, was the person who was going to bring his message to the non-Jewish people, where some of the other people were going to stick with their Jewish brethren, so to speak. So he was really out there. And possibly you have heard this in your growing up years. I certainly had, but it had never occurred to me to ask, how precisely did he do that? Like, where did he find these Gentile people to talk to? So, in any event, it was an absolutely fabulous trip. So, in the process of exploring all the history, we went to amazing places. Now, I've traveled to any number of countries and have loved it and have been to their historical spots and their holy spots and so on. But something happened in Turkey more than once that's never have more that relates to your prior topic. We were in a museum in Ankara, and it was a marvelous museum. It was an ancient building, but it had just fairly recently been rehabbed into a museum, and it had a large exhibit on the Hittite civilization, which was like 3,000, 3,500 years ago, something like that. I was hardly up on my Hittite history, just having heard of it in Old Testament stuff. And the fella did a marvelous job of giving us the history of all of that. And then we were turned loose to go look on our own at the exhibit there. So I was there with two other people. The three of us had come from Florida together. And everybody was wandering around on their own, being drawn to wherever they were drawn. So I saw this little curio looking cabinet, just like you would find in somebody's dining room or hallway. And it had a couple of ceremonial looking objects in it, like pictures of some kind, maybe 14 inches high, 18 inches high at the most, not really that high. So I approached this little curio cabinet so I could get up close and not only look, but read about it and see what it was. And as I approached, to my utter astonishment, my mind went totally still. Not one single thought. not one sound. It's not like I was passing out and losing my mind and not knowing where I was or what I was doing. It's just that all of the chatter, all of the background noise that we pretty much take for granted is like, even when we think our minds are quiet, there's still stuff going on for the most part. And this was utter stillness. I was just dumbfounded. And I have no idea what it was that was a trigger about those two little things, because I walked away from it. My scientific experimentation set in. I walked away and I came back. And when I got within about 3 feet of this, it continued to happen. So I found my traveling companions, didn't tell them why, but I said, come here and look at this really interesting display. And they would come and look and go, yeah, okay, what? For whatever reason, it did not have the same effect. But I'll tell you, when you experience that utter silence with not one single thought, there's no way I can possibly explain what not one single thought is like, except it was marvelous. It was just like, oh, if this could be the way it is all the time, and then you just conjure up a thought when you need it, and then have this complete silence in your mind. So I thought, now this is really an amazing thing, and I will, of course, never forget it. Well, somewhere later in our trip, I don't remember what city we were in, someplace else, we were going into a mosque. And the reason we were going into this mosque was because it was very well known for the tiles that the ancient Persians made, creating a color, kind of a tomato red color, that nobody could figure out to this day what they did to create this tomato red color. So in we go to this mosque, and I walk about 6 steps into it, and it was not the same as the silence, but I could feel myself deepening, like being pulled into the most amazing peace. And I thought, who cares about tomato red tiles? So I kind of veer off on my own. And it's so delicious that, you know, when you have these little experiences that you think, okay, I'm spending the rest of my life getting my mind cleared out enough that these experiences can become the causeless experience of the day. And I don't know how far I would have gone into that very deep peace. All of a sudden, it was that big noise from the top of it where they do the call to prayer. With some in mosques, they actually have the imam or whoever it is that's in charge of things make an announcement. In most of these big cities, they just have a recording that goes on at the 5 times of the day when people were called to prayer, which meant we had to leave. Well, at least some of us had to leave, because women aren't allowed in there, which is another story. But nevertheless, it was just an exquisite, causeless thing. This didn't happen because of walking up to a curio cabinet. It just happened because it happened. And there was a third place in outside of Ephesus. Ephesus is way over on the western side of Turkey. And there's a home there that is allegedly the home of Jesus' mother, Mary. The legend is that she was brought up to that part of Turkey, and that's where she lived the rest of her life. There's not one shred of historical evidence to support that, but when a legend grabs hold, it doesn't matter whether that's historically true or not. It's like it's revered anyway. And it's revered not only by Christians, but by Muslims as well, because there's a whole chapter in the Quran about Mary. She's very, very, very deeply revered by that faith. So you have people from all over the world, from those two faiths, coming to that place, and somehow, I don't understand things like this, but somehow the collective energy of all of those devoted and devout people coming to that one place, the same thing happened when I walked in her little house, which is, I don't know, about as big as my kitchen, and about 4 steps in the door, and that same deepest peace just started to, and I would have just stayed there forever, but there was a stream of people behind me. You had to come in one door, walk through it, and then walk out another. I think I would have been trampled if I decided to take up residence someplace in that little house. But it's because this deepest peace and this deepest joy is built in. And it's not only built in later when we get to be improved in some way, it's built in right now as the very heart and core of our being. And of course, what A Course in Miracles is for, and other paths, but I'm biased toward the Course, I presume you are too, since you're here, that this is one of the most effective and efficient paths to clear the debris out of our mind and to completely shift our thinking from the fear, guilt, what's wrong with this and what's wrong with me, to the entire other side. And I just can't, I'm so glad to have seen this title because it's so true that joy and peace are right where you're breathing, but we can't be aware of it. So last time we talked some, or we normally are not aware of it. Last time we talked about acceptance, so far as I'm recalling, and the need when any of us feel upset, distressed, and we normally think of that as our grief, our upset, our hopelessness, our anger, our sadness, whatever it might be. And I'm sure a lot of you keep hearing from many places the need to simply surrender into that, to befriend it, to stop fighting against it, because that will help quickly change your body chemistry. And then you can take that look at what is it that I'm thinking and believing and putting my attention on that's creating this emotional state in the first place. But one of the things I think we neglect to take a look at are the more subtle experiences, shall we say, our internal experiences. For instance, if you're meditating or if you're just sitting doing something and all of a sudden you think, I just have to get up and move. And I'm not talking about if your body is cramped or something like that. It's like all of a sudden you think, I think I have to go eat, or I have to go do something else, or I have to stop being the way I'm being now. And you think, what is happening now that I suddenly need to make it stop, or I suddenly need to distract myself from it? What is happening is there is this natural built-in trying to dissolve, if you will, barriers to this experience of joy and peace and love and eternity and all of the great sounding words, which when you experience them, you think, oh, it's too bad they have to be called anything because the words are way too small. And people get a little edgy, you know, not what you would call full-blown upset, just the tiniest little bit of nervousness or just a tiny little bit of edginess or a little sense of, you don't even know what to call it, but it makes us want to do something about it so it will stop. Now, that's the ego mind that wants us to do something about it, because it's as if it can feel that very rigid, solid, here are the boundaries between me and everything else, they're starting to dissolve a little bit. It's kind of left to our own devices. We would, all of our opinions and our judgments and our resistances kind of harden us up. And what that allows us to pretend like is with this kind of hardness, it's like, okay, here's where I end, and then there's separate space or something, and then something else or someone else is over there. In other words, it's this artificial sense of I'm a bounded self. Well, the reality of us keeps trying to dissolve these boundaries, and the ego mind keeps trying to strengthen them up or harden them back up. And of course, what the Course is for is coming down on the side of let's dissolve these. So something I want you to really practice and be aware of is that when you find not just big upset, but a minor little something that makes you want to think a lot. Sometimes thinking is a tremendous addiction to escape a feeling. So what the ego thinks is a terrible thing to be happening is really the fabulous thing to be happening to move us into having a direct encounter with that joy, that peace, that love, that delight that's right there that cannot be experienced in our bounded state. I sure hope that makes sense, because if you can see this as the situation it is, it makes it very clear that joy and peace are causeless, nothing that we do or think or pray for or something makes it be there. It's always there, but our rigid, bounded sense of separate self gets in the way. There's a place at the very back of the text where it says, the time, in not these exact words, but it's this sense that the time will come when you realize you don't know who you are or where you are or what you're doing or anything like that. And it's like, and when that time comes, the truth will come and tell you of itself. And that's another way of saying the same thing. In other words, the truth of us is always here, but we are defended against it. And so when you have experiences that are just spectacular, you realize, I don't want to be defended against this. Is this what I'm being defended against? The ego thinks it's defending against its own death, its own dissolution, and it is, but it's not your death or dissolution. And you begin to realize as you practice, just, I think I'm just going to sit here or lie in bed or wherever you might be, and I'm going to just let my judgments and my opinions and my resistances and this is how things have to be and this is how they can't be, just let all that go. And as you do, as you sincerely think, this takes too much energy to try to keep this up, and so I'm not going to do it and see what happens. And what happens is there's the hardness or the edges of us tend to start to melt away, and you experience yourself more and more as, here's where words get to be such a problem, of nothing. And that doesn't mean what the ego would think of it, like, what? I'm a nothing? As if I don't count and not important and I'm going to get lost. It's like, no, in a much more literal sense of, this feels marvelous to not be anything. In other words, it's that experience of an expanded awareness, and it just feels marvelous. And I'm sure that some of these experiences I've had are just barely the tip of the iceberg, but it's enough so that I can feel certain in my own mind and would want to assure anybody else it's safe to let go of the things that harden us up and make us seem separate. And although the ego mind is going to object highly, if you can realize that the ego mind has nothing about your best interest at heart, it's just self-preservation at work, and it's the preservation of a myth. We aren't a thing. We really are this expansive field that's infinite, that's eternal, that we are living in the mind of God, for whom all of those adjectives, of course, are appropriate, and therefore they're also applicable to us. And they just sound like such wild ideas until you say, okay, I'm going to be brave enough not to listen to my ego mind when I approach letting go, and then it wants to like harden things back up again, get those boundaries back up. And I feel like we all just imagine that we're joining hands and going, okay, we're doing this together. This is safe. We're all here together already. So anyway, I hope that helps you see what the purpose of the course is. It's not about learning material. Again, I just feel like I need to say that over and over and over again, because particularly as you go through some of the lessons, there is a tendency to think, what could this be talking about? what could this possibly mean? And it's tempting. Again, this is an egocentric detour or moving away from the process that we're in. It's not something that can be figured out. Causeless joy can be pointed to. A deep, deep peace that just pulls you in can be pointed to, but there's no way you could actually describe it. And there's no way you can understand your way to having that experience. You can practice your way to having that experience, which of course is what we're all dedicated to doing. And the more we see that, you know what? It's so tiresome to be judging everything all the time. It's like, what I really want to do is to just, okay, that doesn't mean you don't know that what color your wallpaper is or something like that. It's not like you become stupid. It means that whatever is that's in your line of sight, that's in your experience right now, is perfectly a big yes as far as you're concerned. Now, it's not yes because your ego likes it. It's yes because that's what's there. And you begin to have experiences where you realize, this is amazing. Love is the only thing that's actually going on. And another way to point to what the Course is trying to tell us is, okay, let's say the interference, what we would call the interference to that love, if we're going to subscribe to the idea, which is actually true, that joy and peace and love are right here, they're what we are, we don't go get them someplace, we don't evolve them, we don't do any of that stuff, we allow them to make their presence known when I get the barriers out of the way. That's the goal that we're headed toward. And it's an amazing path that we're on, and it's just worth everything in the world to come together to be on this path. But if you decide, so this is another way of categorizing what some of the lessons are about, that if you subscribe to the idea, let's say you go, okay, I'm not experiencing it, but okay, I at least intellectually can understand that love is omnipresent. There's no place where it isn't. So wherever I am and whatever circumstances I'm in, it's here. So if you have no objection to all of the world of form that you happen to be in, it can be a world of form that you like, it can be the world of form that you, let's say that your ego likes, or a world of form that your ego doesn't like, doesn't matter. You just lump it all into one pile. This is the world of form that I happen to be in right now, and I am going to totally accept that what's here is actually here. See, accepting it doesn't have anything to do with, do I approve of this? Do I want this to continue happening? All of those are ego assessments and judgments. This is standing back from the much bigger picture to say, if this is in my experience now, it's because my thought patterns have brought it into my awareness right now. In other words, all of those early lessons endlessly drone on and on and on about what we think and the things we see are a seamless whole. So if you can just think, okay, whatever is in my experience right now is the product of my thought. And the Course tells us it's not only a product of your thought, it's a product of your fearful thought. It's like it's your ego mind kind of turned upside down and dumped out there, and there it is as the world, which is great because then you can see, okay, this is my state of mind at any given moment. It changes every nanosecond or however smallest amount that you can possibly imagine. So if I decide, okay, everything in my life is a manifestation of fearful thought, then if I decide to just unconditionally accept everything which is representative of my fearful thoughts, not going to be in my life if there's not an equivalent thought that I have entertained. So if now I have this opposite approach to what was made with fear, if I decide I'm going to unconditionally accept it. Has nothing to do with any ego assessment of whether it's good or bad or not. We want to keep that kind of activity entirely out of the picture. This is just a recognition, okay, this is what I'm seeing or hearing or smelling right now, but of course visual is what most gets our attention. So if this is what I'm seeing right now, I wholeheartedly embrace its being here. I'm not going to have the slightest objection or pushing against what's here. And when you do that, that is another way to say that the hardening and the separating is loosened up, and you begin to have that direct experience that, oh my God, love is here all the time, and I just couldn't experience it, not because there's anything wrong with me, but because I am habituated to the kind of fear-driven thinking that we're all habituated to. So if we could see this as there's nothing wrong with us, no crime has been committed, this is not, this doesn't say anything about our loving quality or the truth of us. What it tells us is this is a process that keeps us in this hallucinating state. And our job is to stop hallucinating. So if you can just think our time today is about loosening things up, letting things go, not pushing against, not resisting, not hardening up. And another way to say that is being in a defensive position, because absolutely every bit of that will keep us stuck, afraid, small. Our perception will be skewed selectively in an unpleasant direction, and we will just keep the whole cycle moving forward. So right now we do have a cycle. I believe this, and therefore I see it, and because I see it, therefore I believe it, and it becomes a very closed loop. And the purpose of the course is to interrupt that loop and ultimately create another closed loop where one sees lovingly and not fearfully, and the world of time and space that we're still in kind of becomes elevated as the real world, where light and love become apparent just everywhere. That's just what is. I'll tell you another story about that, because these real life stories that real people have, I think, is helpful to all of us. And I've got one in one of our videos, but I'm going to tell you anyway that years and years ago, when I lived in Denver and my children were little small children, that was a very long time ago, we had a study group of six couples, got together every other week, and we studied because we were all intellectually driven, because at that point we had no idea how else to pursue anything. This was very early on in our, shall we say, our spiritual outreach or activities. And we found out about a guy that somebody said would be very interesting to come to talk to our little group, who did reincarnational regressions and stuff like that. So we had him come, and he was very interesting. And he became a friend of mine. I was home with little kids. They were before they were in school. And so he would periodically drop by, and we got to be friends. But he said, okay, I don't know anything about him except he's a truck driver. And when I had called him, this beautiful voice answered the phone. And from the first encounter, I thought, this voice doesn't match with my picture of a truck driver. I couldn't get over how much there seemed to be a disconnect. So finally, he had stopped by one day, and I said, how come it is that you're a truck driver and you've got a voice like that? And he said, because I was a disc jockey for many years. It's like, well, there you go. That's the kind of voice I would have expected to have a disc jockey to have. And I said, well, then why were you, he was no longer doing this truck driving, he was doing all of his teaching now, but I said, so why were you driving a truck? And then he said, well, he had had his, the love of his life had broken up with him, and he was so distraught. and so in such despair that he just couldn't possibly imagine living. So he decided he would shoot himself. So he was wherever he went to shoot himself, and he has his gun, and he's having this thought that goes through his mind that, you know what, in about 2 seconds, I'm going to be dead. And so it occurred to him that there was kind of no point in hanging on to any of his grievances or any of his animosity toward anybody, because kind of what was the point since he's now on his way out? And somehow he managed, honestly, to the heart of his being, he was serious about that. In other words, that was his real honest to goodness. Why not? You know, I'm going to be gone. I let everything go. And with that, he said for an instant, he felt like the worst slime at the bottom of the bucket. And then everything turned into light. Now, this was a man who had not one possible spiritual thought in his head. He knew nothing, not even sentence one about metaphysics or anything else that had been a topic that was of no interest to him. Well, this is a stunning enough experience for any of us, but for somebody who didn't have any idea what had just happened, he had totally surrendered his grievances. He had totally practiced real forgiveness, not pardoning kind of stuff, but the release in his own mind that allows us to move into what the Course refers to as the real world. Well, this was so shocking to him that he realized, well, there's no way in the world that I can possibly keep a job where I've got to go on the radio and go blah, blah, blah about inane stuff all day long. So he thought, I've got to find a job doing something where I am as alone and quiet and by myself and nobody to talk to as possible. So that's how he got involved for a while with his long distance, long haul truck driving, because that afforded him time and space to process this. It took him about a year before he had this all completely integrated. And then at that point, he completely changed everything in his life, and his whole metaphysical study and teaching and so on and so forth was what he did for the rest of his life. He's been gone for a few years now, but in any event, so that happened to be a spontaneous experience. He didn't know a thing intellectually about forgiveness, but it's great proof that it works. It doesn't matter if you understand any of it. It matters that you practice it. It matters if we truly do go, I'm releasing everything about anybody because why not? That was his point. In ours, it's the same. Like, why not? We need to do this. And all of these beautiful causeless things that are built into what we are can become known to us. They can't. There's no way that this experience can beat down the doors that we put up. If we're going to put up walls, then we're the ones that are stuck behind the walls. So anyway, I hope you will think on those things. And if anybody has a question, of course, please do let me know. I also wanted to touch a little bit, since it's our last time, about the whole idea of intuition or guidance, because we so tend not to pay attention to it. And it's such an important thing to do. I just do lots and lots of counseling. And a very common thing that I run into is people will want a common comment, so to speak, or a complaint will be, well, people don't listen to me, that, and on and on about any number of other things. But that is something that comes up over and over and over again. And what I always want to remind all of us is that other people treat us like we treat us. And so it's very clear to think, okay, if it seems to be like other people aren't listening to me, how is it that I'm not listening to me. In other words, if you subscribe to that idea, which I find seems to work 100% of the time, I have never yet had it fail, where you couldn't put together what someone felt like another person was doing to them, only to discover, once they could be led into it, that's what they were doing to themselves. So what happens is we're so habituated to pleasing other people, or feeling like the only way to get along in life is to get along. And so many people from very earliest days were punished or abandoned or ignored, or for whatever way, it was an unsatisfactory encounter when they stood up for themselves or said what they needed to say at 2 or 3 or 4. And so what got programmed in, what got wired in, is really standing up for yourself or saying what's really on your mind gets you in trouble. And we're severely wired to avoid what gets us in trouble. So for virtually all, well, everybody, I shouldn't say virtually all of us have to relearn so much of that early programming and just get about the business of getting ourselves rewired, which is what the course is for. All of these lessons provide the rewiring material, because as with any program, if you find coding in a program that's producing the wrong output, you don't put correct coding side by side with coding that's giving you the error. They don't both sit in there. The new coding replaces the old coding. So all of this material in the lessons are for the purpose of providing new coding to replace what's there. And a very common thing, as I mentioned, is it's not safe to say no, or it's not safe to ask for what I want. It's not safe to ask for help. It's not safe to follow my own direction. Now, little tiny children may not use any of that language, but that is the nonverbal experience of what goes on. So as adults, we have to now stand back and become aware of how we're habituated to not putting our needs on the list. You know, we're busy taking care of somebody else, but we're not listening to our own intuition, to that voice of wisdom. You can call it the Holy Spirit, your intuition, your guidance, the voice of wisdom. It doesn't matter. It's the function that matters. And it's such a common thing, and I bet every one of you can relate with this, that let's say somebody asks you to go someplace. It doesn't matter where or why. And there's a part of you that feels kind of flat, like you don't really especially want to. In other words, it's not like there's great energy that comes up about this. But then your programming kicks in and you think, oh, well, I don't really have anything else particularly important to do. And I don't want to hurt their feelings or something like that. And so you say yes. And that is the perfect example of how you are not listening to yourself. Because when anything comes up, it either is going to have energy in it, like it's a yes, and it can be a really big yes, you know, like, oh, this is such a yes, you feel like you're ejected out of your chair, or it can be a very subtle yes, but you can feel your energy rise in some way, like something about this feels right, as compared to something feels flat. Now, you may have your own words to distinguish between those two. That works for me. I either can feel energy in it, like, yes, I at the core of my being, yes, I really want to do that, or go to that place, or write this thing, whatever it might be. Or I can feel the flatness of it, like it would be an obligation or a responsibility or a chore, but not what my heart is in. And so, as I say, it can be either a great big thing or it can be a small one. But this inner guidance system, kind of a GPS system, is built into absolutely every one of us. And the course is very clear that we need to follow this guidance and not our ego programming, because if our ego programming is making the decision, it's based on this old trying to stay safe and avoid punishment code, which means it's all based on the past. And as the Course says, but your intuition is an out-of-time circumstance, shall we say, that already knows the big picture and knows how things are unfolding. It's not a matter of what we should do, but like what inevitably this is going to be happening. And in any event, again, it's one of those things that words can point to but can't explain or describe. The Course has to point to all kinds of nonverbal experiences, and it does it amazingly well. And it does an amazing job of leading us to these experiences by providing the language for us to use and the ideas for us to use and the exercises for us to do to keep getting ourselves rewired so that we make ourselves available. We've met the criteria of how we must be thinking and responding so that our basic nature can become known to us. And that, of course, is the whole point, because our basic nature is what we're looking for. It's what we so long to experience. You know, all of us who have felt like something is missing, there's something right beyond where we are. So, and sometimes there's a place in the early part of the lessons where it says, and I paraphrase, that following your intuition may lead you into fear. It may lead you into a situation that you think, well, I was following my intuition, but now look at this big mess I've gotten myself in. Well, your intuition was leading you into the big mess, was leading you into that circumstance that you need to face head on, because this is the growing edge of letting go. This is putting you in a situation or with people where you could see those hard places in you, whether it's the guilt, the defensiveness, the things you accuse yourself of. So you will be in situations or with people and you think, I hate this. It's like, why did I do this? This, my guidance must surely have been wrong, because there is the notion that if I follow my guidance, I go straight to bliss. No, you follow your guidance and you will go to the places that we need to be taken to so that we can let go of what's in the way. So always, always trust your guidance. I had some friends and clients who lived here in Florida years ago, and they debated for quite a long time about whether or not they would move to Boulder, Colorado, which they wanted to do for assorted reasons. And so I spent some time with them as to help them sort out that, yes, this was their guidance. So they did. And about the after a year and a half of moving there, and if you all, if some of you may be from Colorado, but they had a very unusual forest fire situation up in the foothills, right up outside of Boulder, with like hurricane force winds. I mean, much stronger winds, and it was just burning up the hillside. Well, they had a gorgeous multi-million dollar house built into the hillside up in that area. And her husband and daughter were out of town scouting for colleges when she got the message. And I don't recall if it was by phone or somebody knocked on her door that said, quick, run, the fire is coming right toward you. So she grabbed the dog, her computer, and she had enough sense to have a box right there with her important papers and so on in it. That's all. Ran out the door, jumped in the car, and left. And their house, their gorgeous, gorgeous house, burned totally to the ground. There was not one shred of everything left. There was one concrete step left out of basically a four-story building. And about 2 days after that, I thought, I need to call them and see if they happened to be where that fire was. And so she answered the phone and said, I wondered when you'd be calling. And she said, we're wonderful. She said, now see, most people would think, okay, I was guided to go to Colorado. I go to Colorado, I follow my guidance, and my house burns down and we lose everything. And they both were in the most marvelous space because their marriage had been on the rocks a little bit. And they said, this is marvelous. We're forced to start all over again. We're forced to be together in a new way. And it was the beginning of an entirely new chapter in their lives. So that's kind of an extreme example. And all of us have more minor examples, but I loved her voice when, because by this time, of course, caller ID says who's on the phone. So instead of saying, hello, how are you? She said, I wondered when you'd be calling. See how they were. So anyway, they were marvelous. So do not be deterred. When you follow that sense of, yes, I feel like this is really right to do, and you go right smack into a learning experience, that's why your guidance has led you there. And don't let this paralyze you, like, I'm never going to follow anything at all. I'm going to sit in my living room forever because I don't want to have to do this. It's like, well, you just can't. You know, if you're going to expect to have a marvelous life, we have to keep running up against these challenges because the challenges are just showing us where we're holding on to something that we absolutely must release. Because that's what forgiveness is about, of course, is releasing our grievances. It doesn't have anything to do with anybody else. They just remind us of what must be released on our part. So anyway, guidance is just so super. And then I guess the last idea is the idea that now is the only time there is. It's really true. Now is the only time there is. The past and future are really inventions. It's as if we're being newly created or newly born or newly, I don't know what else to say besides those two words, every moment. And our past, however fabulous or however dismal, does not have to enter into this. You know, we're so in love with our stories, and that's great. I mean, stories can be good or bad, but they are in the way. And it's marvelous new scientific information that says, because people will say, but what about this awful thing that happened when I was little, or this happened, or my parents weren't nice to me, or whatever. There's a lesson that says, the childhood you remember never occurred. And you think, what? It never occurred? It's nope, the childhood you remember. So here, now listen to this. There's some new scientific material that says memories are recreated every time we decide to think about something. In other words, we act like memories are like books on a shelf, where if you want to think about something awful or good or just something in your past that happened, we behave as if, like pulling a book off a shelf, where I'm going to open up this book about this particular thing. I'm going to look over it and read it, close it up and stick it back on the shelf. That's not what happens. There's this amazing neurological stuff that you can look at through a microscope that shows that every time you decide to, if we want to use the verb recall an event, you reconstruct it all over again. It shows through a microscope, the new neural networks are built every time. In other words, if you decide, if you've thought for a long time that your eighth birthday was terrible because nobody came to your eighth birthday party. So every time you think about eighth birthday party, you get to create neural connections all over again about nobody loved you, nobody cared about you, this meant you were not okay, and whatever it was you concluded about that. Well, you think, I can build myself a new past, since the past isn't anything but a big story anyway at this point. Once something is over, it doesn't exist anymore. So if we insist on having a past and make up a new one, because that's what we do anyway, so use different ingredients to make up the one here. So you think, you know what? I'm going to remember that, well, because nobody came to my birthday party, my parents were so marvelous. They did everything possible to try to make this a very special day for me, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I'm just inventing this as I go along, but it's like you can decide to remember anything however you want it. And the ego mind says, you can't do this. That's what really happened. You see how rigid it wants to be? This is part of its trying to keep its boundaries and its walls and its sense of stability up. If we go messing with what it thinks is an important component of its well-being, which is we keep remembering things the same way, it doesn't like that. But you know what? This is not about doing what the ego mind likes. This is how to be free of it. It's the problem, not the solution, as it presents itself to be. So remember this. Right now, your past doesn't anymore have to have anything to do with anything. If you choose to regard whatever is going on now, or even if you must refer to a past event, you can do it from a place of love and compassion and acceptance instead of whatever it is that you have used as your template before. And when you do all of these things, keep cleaning things up. There's two interesting ways to look about this. We may have talked about it in our first session, I don't recall, but from a quantum physics point of view, in case there are different listeners, it's as if we continually blink off and on between our manifest and unmanifest state. And it's as if when we're in the quantum field unmanifest state, it says, how do you want to be when you blink back on? And this happens allegedly 144,000 times per second. So we're not aware of this blinking off and on thing. We seem to be very constantly here. Well, we aren't, according to our quantum physics friends. So which tells you that every moment, just like the Course tells us, we can start all over again. We can regard things differently. We can use being generous and compassionate and kind and gentle with ourselves and with everybody else and with every circumstance is always our option right now. And nothing gets in the way of what we choose. Nothing. Whatever we decide to do, however we decide to approach things, is how they're going to get approached. Another way to look at it, and this is kind of, it's hard to know which is my favorite, but this is in some of the new biology fields where the idea is all of the cells in our body, all 60 trillion cells, are listening to everything we think. And it's responding. It's not just a passive listener. Every single thing we think, it's in the process of turning it into what we call our three-dimensional world. And we could go on, but we're nearly out of time. But the point is, when the Course says, now is the only time there is, it's really now, it's not even a little slice of time. Now is a different dimension than time, because this is where there aren't any boundaries. Everything is new. Everything is newly created. You can begin to think differently, regard yourself differently, and the difference that we want that to be is more loving, more gentle, more compassionate. We have been so hard on ourselves with our self-judgment. Even if you manage not to be judgmental of anything else, most of us have learned from very early on really a very harsh kind of self-judgments. And it is absolutely imperative that at every moment we remember my job is to be kind. We've imprisoned ourselves. We've hurt ourselves greatly over nothing. We haven't ruined ourselves. We haven't changed ourselves. We cannot ever alter or diminish that causeless joy, that causeless peace, which is built into that invisible energy, frequency, or whatever word you want to use, that we are. We are indestructible. These elements that make up what we are cannot be changed. Thank goodness. We've terrified ourselves believing we had. Thank goodness we haven't. And of course, all of us are marching down this path of changing our minds so that this experience of what we think of as our daily life will be a distant memory at some point, because things will get better and better and better and better. And no one outside of ourselves can influence this. This is our decision that we make. Will I be loving? Will I be defensive? Will I be compassionate? Will I be judgmental? That is a decision that we make on a second-by-second basis, and we all know which one is in our best interest to make. So thank you, and I will remind you one more time about, we hope you will come visit us at my website, carolhow.com, because we've got all of this and a whole lot more in our lessons. We've got blogs, we've got lots and lots and lots of free resources on this page, all designed to try to move us in the direction of changing our minds on our own behalf. Thanks a million. Does anybody have, I think we have like a minute or two. If anybody has a question or a comment, I'd love to hear from you. Nope. Nobody there? Okay, Ken, I'll turn this back to you. Ken, are you there? Is somebody there to turn this back to? Okay. Thanks a million. Bye-bye for now.